Hey friends, it's Margaret and David on the Fundraising Leadership Podcast. Welcome, welcome. Welcome back to school for many of you. So here we are in August of 2025, and Margaret and I were talking about she was noticing that the college kids were going back to school in Boulder,
Yeah,
Colorado.
it's move-in week. So there's
Move-in
signs
week.
everywhere. Are you in the red group or the purple group and all that?
Right. And many of you might be aware that my wife Lillian is elementary school teacher, second grade, and she started back to school, and her kids showed up at the end of last week. So we thought we might talk a bit about back to school and how this applies to everyday adult life.
I think we were talking about how much anxiety parents seem to have in sending their kids back to school, right? Like it's hard, like new teachers and transition and we miss that being able to sleep a little bit later and we're back into the world of morning conflict and hurting our children out of bed and through breakfast and out the door and but there's a lot in the space there, right? I had book club last night. Almost everybody else in my book club has children who are, not everybody, but most of them who are in still middle school or high school. And it's all anyone can talk about, David.
The interesting thing, as you say that, Margaret, is I noticed that the parents seem to have more anxiety, at least with the elementary school kids. The parents have more anxiety than the kids do. The kids they like just transition from playing on the, at home or in the country, wherever they were, to playing in the classroom. At least for that's but my wife has to reel him in a little bit,
Have you ever wondered why that might be? I'm trying to think about if that was true. My kids are much past their past school age at this point in time. And I used to get like some little butterflies for sure on behalf of my children when I would drop them off. And I wonder if it was remembering, like, maybe that I was anxious before going to school, or maybe there's something else going on there. What do you think? Why would parents get more anxious than kids would?
That's a good question. I what I notice, at least, I never really felt that anxious about my kids going back to school.
Did you feel anxious for yourself, like when you went back to school as a kid?
Yes, school was not as I shared with you before we got on the podcast, I was a very sensitive kid. Of course, I didn't know about my sensitivity, and so I remember like third grade at PS 208 in Brooklyn, and I think I had four teachers that year, and I just had emotional meltdown after emotional meltdown. So, and that seemed to go like through my high school years, not the rotating door of teachers. By the time I went to high school, we were the ones doing the rotating around the school, right? And but school was never a great environment for me, to be honest. It got better for me in college. Then it got worse for me in grad school. So I don't know. Institutional education, I got through it.
When I think back, I remember I definitely had a lot of hyperachiever in me as a child, and it was probably less about the grades and more about people pleaser meets hyperachiever, really wanting to be noticed and seen by my teachers, wanting to kind of stand out as a good student. And so I do kind of have, it's not an acute memory, but this memory of like just being ill at ease at the beginning, like what outfit should I wear the first day? Like what kind of impression am I going to make? And I'm sure I didn't use the word impression, but that was kind of on my mind. And now I wonder if then we sort of turn around and take our own trauma about going back to school and like, hold that for our children instead of just letting them have their experiences.
Well, what I notice in the reports I get from my wife is that that the parents seem a bit more anxious than the kids do. So that's all I can say about it. I think my sense is that a lot of that anxiety does stem from, on the one hand, parents wanting their children to excel, let's say. And on the other hand, where I think, and that's just kind of a natural longing for your children. I would believe it would be like a healthy longing for you to want your children to excel at school in the modern culture, okay, that we live in. The Where it crosses the line, I think, is, as you say, when it crosses into longing for them to hyperachieve, like okay, you're in kindergarten and we got to start now so you could get into Princeton.
Princeton is paying attention. Yeah. I as you're speaking, I'm having this thought. What if we want our children to achieve, whether it's hyperachieve or just achieve, right? We have a longing for them to do well. But I think many parents have like an equal longing for their children to fit in, to be happy, to make great friends. And I don't always know that you can ask for every single one of those things at the same time for any one kid.
It's a lot of pressure that parents are putting on themselves. Having been a child who didn't fit in very well, if I were, and thankfully my two daughters did manage to fit in well in the schools they went to, and so I didn't have this worry. But if there's a longing that I would have had for them is in terms of achievement over fitting in, I would have longed for them to just fit in. Don't worry too much about the grades, but that would it. But I understand the other flip side of this. We live in a modern conventional culture where there's a certain amount of programming that's happened to the parents, and sort of like they have this equation like, if my kid does well, in school, then they'll be, set up to succeed in life. And there may be some truth in that. There may be a modicum of truth in that. But not every kid is designed, either personality or intelligence or emotionally, for the conventional industrial education complex.
Right. You can have kids who are super smart but don't have school brain.
Yeah, that's
Right?
true. We may have mentioned this on another podcast, but when I went to high school in New York, public high school, we had this thing called BOCES, which was anyone from New York probably knows what BOCES is because it still exists. But it was for kids who wanted to pursue trades,
Oh, sure. They call it different things, I think, in other schools, but yeah, absolutely.
So, classmates of mine would, show up for a certain amount of conventional school, and then they'd go off to BOCES, and I'd see them over at, football or wrestling or lacrosse practice,
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know, as a things tough,
Yeah,
what can we
tough.
say?
Yes,
Yeah,
I think we get
you
into
want the best for your children.
Me too. But I think many of us want, I mean, I'm speaking probably a little bit for myself here, but want things that maybe are mutually exclusive for our children. You know, we want them to stand out and fit in all at the same time, right? That kind of thing where our desires for them actually are not synchronous, are asynchronous sometimes.
Well, and there's also, we were talking prior to getting on the podcast about one of the sabotaging behaviors that we all do at some time, but some of us do it more than others, and that's called avoiding. Avoiding. So if you I see this with coaching clients who, for example, avoid conflict. It's one of the biggest things that adults who have this kind of saboteur avoid. So
Right,
they
or
will
something
avoid
that
having,
they perceive is going to be uncomfortable or unpleasant.
that too. That's even a more mild form of it, but also pernicious, right? It's so you avoid everything that's going to be uncomfortable, or what was the other word you used? Or unpleasant. Yeah. Uncomfortable or unpleasant. And a stronger form of that, which, nobody really wants to get into a conflict, but that would be like, most of us want to avoid having a conflict, but it's just part of human nature. You like apple pie and I like ice cream. There we go. Cherry pie and ice cream. We might have a. I'm reflecting upon your LinkedIn posts about sweet potato fries,
Which was quite controversial, as it turns out.
was it? Did that was that post?
wasn't, but somebody
All right.
definitely made a comment like, I don't get it. Like, what's so great about sweet potato fries?
Oh yeah, I saw that comment. So I think this as a parent, you may have a child with, some learning differences. And I know I had le learning differences. It didn't get diagnosed till later in life. I don't think maybe my parents did avoid it. I don't know. There weren't the kind of resources that are around today back when I was, in elementary school. And at least over the years, I saw with classmates of my children and other situations where parents really didn't want to confront the fact that their child may have a learning difference.
Right. Or some, it's interesting as we're talking about LinkedIn because there's so much of a, I would say, a really empowered movement on LinkedIn for people who self-identify as neurodivergent in different ways, neurodiverse in different ways, kind of claiming that identity in a way that, it's like they're adults now and they're understanding what the gifts are, what the challenges are, and learning how to articulate it. And yeah, but it's really hard to do that when you're in first grade. Right? You don't know yet. You need your parents to help you there.
And I would say I do see more of it on LinkedIn, which I applaud. That is to say, adults who are claiming their attention deficit disorder or present company claiming his form of dyslexia, right? That's me, guys, not Margaret.
Got my own stuff going on, but it's not dyslexia.
Actually, I when I always had trouble reading, so I was a very terrible, but yeah, you could say that, terrible standardized test taker,
Right. Yeah, that's hard.
because of my dyslexia, my form of dyslexia, where reading's very tough for me. This is from a guy who's like written 7 books, but I don't have any problem writing. I just have trouble reading. So thank God
Really
for
common,
audiobooks.
really common, and really commonly missed, right? For
That's
kids.
one that's missed a lot. And so when you're on a timed test for reading comprehension,
Right. And you have to
and
reread the sentence
I
18
keep
times.
reading 18
Right.
times, and I ran out of time every time.
Yeah.
Every time I ran out of time on the SAT because my brain just doesn't work that way. Now, if I had listened to that passage and then had the questions, I probably would have nailed it and chugged through pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because my listening comprehension is much better than my reading comprehension. And my listening retention is better than my reading retention. So I think, and I put that out in the world, and I'm glad to see others put it out in the world. I would say that there's still some fear, and rightfully so, that you might be discriminated against for some form of neurodiversity. And so I would expect that we would be many, many more people who would talk about this on LinkedIn than I see. But I'm glad to see it coming. I really am. I applaud it. And for those of you in the audience, we're going to post this, and we do post it out on LinkedIn. And if you're inspired and want to help some other people, then put a comment in the post. The Margaret posts and I post, and maybe you can inspire some other people to just gently describe some of the struggles they've had in the past and some of the victories that they've had.
Yeah, but it also does start to explain for anybody who was sensitive or who, did struggle with any kind of, learning challenges, like, and now you're the parent and you're dropping your kid off at school. Like, I imagine you do have you're pretty jumpy about how your child's experience is going to be and, whether they're going to feel seen or included in ways that you maybe didn't feel when you yourself were a kid.
And so this is where the avoider-saboteur can sabotage. If you have one of these as a parent, it could sabotage how your child does in school. Because if you avoid sort of getting the help that they need, it can be very difficult for a child. I mean, I wish I had some of the services that are available now. I think I might have done a little bit better at school. So thankfully, we have much more support available for children, and there's no shame in your child having a learning difference. There's just no shame in that anymore,
Although,
Thank
how, I
God.
mean, if you had been diagnosed as dyslexic, like, how do you think your dad, who was so academic and so cerebral and such a reader, like, how do you think that might have gone, like, in your family?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. My parents, I've said this on the podcast previously, my parents were very traditional people, but in many respects, very liberal. So I really don't know. I really don't know. I remember there was some awareness because I used to get B's and D's mixed up all the time when, or like probably
Like,
when I was in like first grade,
maybe
very
B is
common.
the better grade. The D's are the ones you want to avoid bringing home to your parents.
I thought, yeah, this is I'm still mixed up about that.
No, wait, what? Can you
Yeah,
explain that one more time?
I had to stop and think about what you were saying, just as you were saying. It took a little bit of while for me to get that.
I'm being playful because I imagine your parents would have noticed a D, a B versus a
Oh,
D
they
is an
did notice
important one.
that, and they did work with me on that. I remember that. I remember sitting at the dining room table and being corrected and somehow figuring the B's and the D's out, not in the sense of grades, but in sense of writing and printing and so forth. So I don't know. I don't know how my sense is I got through school like in a brute force sort of way. That's how I did it. Like just putting in a ton of extra time. I mean, all throughout college, I mean, grad school, whatever. It was brute force for me. So I hid a lot of that by just extraordinary effort, which is one way of getting through school.
And I definitely, I was emotionally sensitive, and I definitely was a bit of a loner till 8th grade, was when I first like had my first amazing friend, and we're still friends. But I had a school brain, like always. I always had a school brain, and I saw this with my kids, who are both smart, and one of them had a school brain, and the other one had much less of a school brain. And like, I can tell you which one struggled a lot more, and it wasn't about being smart, it was just about a very different, but yeah, the way information just like it comes in and it gets filed and I can find it again. And I like, I don't know, it just worked. I wouldn't describe myself as having an amazing memory, like not ever, not as a kid, but stuff just, I understood like somehow, oh, that's important, I need to remember that. And it would get filed away someplace in my brain. And this is not something that I like, this is just how I was born, right? This was the ecosystem of my brain. So it is a sort of fascinating.
So, the education industrial complex exists to strengthen the rational analytical part of the brain and mind. But there are a whole bunch of other intelligences that are, as we've come to learn now, and I'm being very generalized in terms of the areas of the brain, but the right brain stuff is the emotional, the intuitive, the artistic aspects of intelligence. And then there's even the spatial and physical. And so there's all these different kinds of intelligences that have come to the forefront. That are not necessarily cultivated in, as I remind my wife Lillian, 30 kids in public school in rows. It was like being in the military, you know? That's the way it was. And if you were an emotionally sensitive kid, it sucks for you,
Now,
you know?
no space at
And
all.
don't get up. And if you're a kid who's got ants in his pants and you're a boy and you're getting up and wanting to walk around the room, no, sucks for you. You know? So thankfully, a lot has changed
Thanks a lot.
since the day I was in New York City public schools, you
Yeah,
know?
I do think things hopefully have changed more some places than other places. And yeah, well, here's wishing all of you parents a smooth transition, and yeah, that the year holds what it needs to for you and your kids. And we wanted to just talk for a moment. David, I don't know if you read a study or, here's it's not the answer to everything, but it was a little antidote for anxiety and illness. Do you want to share what you read about hugging?
We talked about hugging.
Yeah.
So there's some good science out there by, left-brainers who've got PhDs
Actual
about the
scientists, yeah.
science. She blinded me. About hugging. And I was sharing with Margaret that, second graders are, and which is what the grade that my wife teaches are just, they're just little kids, and and my wife's open to hugging, you know? And so these kids, just, they come up and they hug her, and it's very natural. Hugging is a very natural human touching experience. And the science on this is they've done, double blind studies, and they've shown that people who give and receive hugs have a boosted immune system over those who do not. So, regardless of where you work and what you do, if you have children, be sure you're hugging them a lot. It'll boost your immune system and it'll boost theirs. And if you're Within boundaries, within safe boundaries. Margaret and I hug each other all the time. Can I say that, Margaret?
You can say that.
Yeah. So if it's permissible, if you have permission, you can always ask permission, of someone. I see you're a little down. Would you like a hug? So you could do something like that. I'm in a men's group now where the guys hug each other. It's like, okay. Did you want to add anything to this?
No, I've always been a big fan of the hug. I do love a hug, so I love that, we were onto something, and now there's science to back it
Yes,
up.
we are. And I know we'll probably get some daggers and spears thrown at us from the HR folks in the audience. And so that's good. I guess if we do get the daggers and spears, I guess we've struck the right tone. All
Permission,
right. If you're one of
permission.
those HR people who just is like, no way, we're doing this in the world, come to one of our retreats and Margaret and I will give you a hug.
There you go. There you go. We don't want hugs to be creepy. We're not encouraging
Right.
people to go hug people that they don't know, but with
Right.
permission, with permission. And
With permission.
certainly, since we're talking about back to school, certainly within families, hugging.
Within your family, for sure. Actually, I'll share. Lillian and I, for many, many years now, have just always, when one of us leaves the house in the morning, we give each other a hug. You never know if you're even going to see that person ever again. So that's another reason to do it.
Jeez, that's a little heavy. I feel like 1 minute you're supposed to try to hug for a whole minute. Have you heard that? Like something happens that's different with a longer hug.
Wow,
It's different.
that I have to say, as someone who got back into hugging later in life, in some of the training that you and I went through, our coach training and our leadership training, I don't think I'm at the 1 minute mark, except for with my wife and my children.
All right. Well, wherever you can do it, I'll have to look up
But
what
this is
that.
a
But there was
challenge now.
some,
I might have to not, I might have to stretch myself.
Well, I'll see if I can find the science on that and I'll put it in the show notes for the podcast because I don't have it right
I
now.
will say this, I do practice the martial art of jiu-jitsu, and the sparring rounds are 5 minutes long. So you could say that I hug men for 5 minutes at a time every day that I spar.
You could say that, but I don't think that's probably 100% accurate that that's what you're
It's not
doing.
ex quite how it feels.
No, it's not a super loving, supportive sort of hold, I don't
No,
think.
especially when your sparring partner has his arm around your neck and then
Might be the anti-hug, David.
you're tapping him, and it's not like, oh, thank you, that's so nice. It's more like, get off my neck. All
Yeah, so
right,
we want to
friends. I
encourage
hope.
anybody also who, just something kind of got a little alerted by us talking about this avoidant saboteur. And if this, feels like it's something that's playing a bigger role in your life and success and connections, then you want it to be reach out to one of us. We'd be happy to tell you a little bit more about what that is. And we both do PQ coaching, which is a pretty specific kind of coaching to help downsize that saboteur.
Yeah, reach out to one of us and we're happy to help you with that. All
Yeah.
right, friends. Well, until next time, go hug somebody.
Guff. Yeah.
That's how you can put it into practice.
Put it into practice.
All right, take care.